Today's program has been brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit internationalculinarycenter.com.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
All right, that's the sound of the news, and you are listening to a live edition of The Main Course. I'm your host, Patrick Martins. We're broadcasting live out of Roberta's Brooklyn, 261 Moore Street. Just had a couple pizzas, one with kale on it, which I heard from a great Italian master was one of the best pizzas he's ever had. And, of course, we had the Crispy Glover, an old standard, and that was also very delicious. And we are very excited to have our guest here today. He's the executive chef, Fortunato Nicotra.
Sì, perfetto.
Benvenuto.
Grazie.
And we're very excited. It's a very exciting time for Heritage Radio Network. We had a few students in yesterday who are part of the Saxelby Scholarship Program, and they were learning about radio and doing some activities to learn about radio as a media source. That's very exciting. And the homepage has looked really fantastic. If you do not go on, please remember to visit on a daily basis, because those new shows are changing and they're absolutely fascinating. And I even heard that one of our hosts, the Cherry Bomb host, is now the head of all Yahoo.com food division. So, man, this little station started as a clubhouse for kind of like food hippies, and now look at it. It's, produced some amazing results. Very, very exciting. So we are in studio today with a man who really is, not known like Mario Batali, and yet is just as respected within the community. He also cooks at a restaurant that has numerous stars, Michelin and New York Times. So it's a lot of responsibility. And he's never been on the station before, so it's a real honor to be interviewing him. And Fortunato, you just celebrated your 19th year at Felidia. Is that true?
Just yesterday.
Wow, fantastic. So tell us, I mean, these kids nowadays, we were having lunch with them, they don't like staying in the same place for a long time. You know, they change their mind, they move, they don't do the same thing over and over. Can you speak to the importance of staying at one place for 19 years and what that's meant for you?
Sure. Lydia, for sure, has something to do with that.
Lydia Bastianich.
Lydia Bastianich.
She's like the Alice Waters of Italian culture, right?
Yeah, she changed probably what Americans think about Italian food. Before it was just Italian-American food with like tomato and garlic, and everybody think was the real deal. But she really changed it. She tried for years to bring the real flavor of Italian food in the States, and I can say today one of the best compliments we get in a restaurant is where Italians say they eat better here than in Italy. Mm-hmm. That's one of the best compliments.
Sure.
So it's been like really unbelievable stay with Lydia all this time. I come in the States to do an experience for a few months, maybe a few years. And 19 years later, I'm still here with Lydia. She's an unbelievable person. We share anything about food.
What did you learn from her? We'll talk about your past a little bit in a second. But what have you learned from her? Most importantly, things that you might not have known or done exactly in that way.
About, let's say we probably share the same respect we have for ingredients. Mm-hmm. We both think it's nothing really to elaborate. When you have a great ingredient to start, great product or produce to start, is like the best things to do is like have the ingredient speak for itself. So we share that I think is great. We shared that big passion about food, but most likely ingredient is because everything starts from ingredient.
But some things change. Like I know pasta innovation continues to happen. What is important not to change? when it comes to that, and talk about just pastas in general. I know you have a gluten-free line now. So, I mean, certain things do adjust with time.
Yeah, gluten-free is one of the last. I don't know if it's just a trend or if it's a need. But we start to see something was changed, start to change like probably 6-7 years ago. I don't remember to have all this problem about gluten-free before probably 2006, 2007. Mm. And then, like one day, we have like in at night, one service, we have like 5-6 people asking for gluten-free. We were not prepared for that. Mm. So people coming in an Italian restaurant and try to have a gluten-free dinner was not the best that we can offer. So say, okay, no pasta, but was something wrong there? So we start to get informed about what we can do for gluten-free. We start to find in the market a few commercial pasta like corn, brown rice, all those things. We tested, we have it, we were not happy about that because it was not the texture, and especially the texture, but also the flavor was completely off. Mm-hmm. So we start to see what we can do, and we start to play with flours. It was not easy. What's not easy because if you try to avoid the gluten, is the texture of the pasta, how cooked and how you present it is completely different. So we start to play with flour. We start to do different mix, different flour. And finally, years later, we find a kind of a solution to even make ravioli, the most difficult pasta to make without gluten.
Oh, interesting. Why is that? Because it's a pocket or what?
It's a pocket. You have to fill with something inside, then you have to close. They have to be sure that they don't break. Mm-hmm. So that's what was one of probably the most difficult things. We find a solution for that. We now have 5-6 gluten-free pasta always in the menu. And 5 years ago, I believe, also I cook a dinner at James Beard. They asked me what I want to do at James Beard. And I in all this year, I've been done Sicilian. I've been done herbs dinner, anything. So what was something new I can do? And I think about gluten-free. In the beginning, I say, oh, but it's also nice if we can fill up the place because
I don't want no one to come.
I don't want to do a gluten-free dinner and then have 20 people in the house. And instead, it was a completely sold-out dinner. Mm. It was a big success. We have journalists and everything. And from there, we start to do regularly. We do class at Felidi also of gluten-free, how to make gluten-free pasta. And every night is like, now I can say it's probably between gluten-free and dairy-free, we are probably 30% of our customer every night.
So interesting how that happened. I know one of your colleagues in your restaurant group, Mark Ladner, has just started a gluten-free thing, learning from, you know, the precedent that you set. Is there a difference? Can you taste the difference? Or you would not have any idea if what you're eating is gluten-free or not?
No, but that's a goal. It's not just make gluten-free because you need to, but it's also because you like it. So, and I have to say some of the pasta we do, and especially the ravioli, they are probably much lighter than the other pasta. Hmm.
So gluten-free actually makes it more airy and lighter.
Also texture is like we do some pappardelle, and sometimes I send it on purpose. Like I know it's 5 people, and it's only person gluten-free at the table, and I send on purpose a testing for the whole table to see the reaction. Mm-hmm. And they like better than regular pasta. Mm-hmm. So it's not just because it's a need. It's also because it's good.
It's good. We're in studio with Fortunato Nicocha, who arrived in New York City to work for celebrity chef Lidia Maticcio. Come si dice?
Maticcio
Bastianich in 1995. Hired her as your executive chef of the famous flagship restaurant Felidia. The restaurant earned 3 stars from Ruth Reichel and maintained 3 stars with Frank Bruni. Wine Spectator named Felidia one of the top Italian restaurants in the U.S. in 98. And in 2008, Jerry Shriver of the USA Today named it number 2 in the end-of-year roundup of restaurants around the world. Nicocha earned his first Michelin star at the age of 23 at the Villa Marchese restaurant in the beautiful seaside town of Milazzo, Sicily. So that is where you're from originally.
I'm originally from Palermo. I moved to Torino when I was 6 years old. Uh-huh. And I get in Milazzo because I used to work for one of the biggest restaurateurs in Torino. and he has a brother who want to open a great restaurant, like an upscale restaurant in Milazzo, and ask me if I want to do the opening.
Madonna. And so you return to your home country. I love Palermo, the food, the focaccias and all that, but was this a high-end restaurant?
It was really a high-end restaurant. It was, and probably is one of the most beautiful restaurants I've ever seen. No, I ever see. It was really the position, all the details, everything was unbelievable. It was beautiful.
But that must be very hard to be organized at a very high-end restaurant in Sicily, because Palermo, maybe you don't get the deliveries, or, I mean, was it a challenge to
run?
That
was not a problem, because I used to get my I don't know, I was not waiting for delivery. I was going in a market every morning, oh. So I get my own stuff.
Cut out the middleman. That's very good. And so so cooking for Sicilians, were they mostly tourists there, or were you cooking for the local people?
No, local people, but like everywhere else, when you have something great and it's close to you, you try to avoid and you want to like to travel, to go to find something else. Mm-hmm. So we have people coming actually from, we have people doing like, 80, 90, 100 miles a night to come and see our restaurant, mm-hmm. coming from Catania or Taormina or from another place.
Oh, I loved it. My first wife was from Sicily, so we would go there all the time. It's so amazing. Agrigento, Piazza Marina, everything is so fascinating. So you used more fish there? I mean, what was unusual and unique?
Yeah, mostly fish. Mm-hmm. Was mostly fish, and the fish was fresh, but really fresh. We used to say, when the fish arrive, as the color of the sea, because you can really see on the skin the color of the sea, which is like hours after the fish comes out of the boat. It's not like, yeah, our fresh fish here is like 24, 36 hours. It's considered really, really fresh. In Sicily, was like a matter of 2-3 hours.
Wow. Very interesting. And then your next job was in the almost opposite region, location, but also culturally. You went to Piemonte, to Torino.
Yeah, Piemonte, Torino. And I actually consider myself very lucky, because they're two opposite way to cook. And while the Piedmontese cuisine is great in fall and winter, the Sicilian, of course, because the freshness, the ingredients is much better in spring and summer. So I consider myself very fortunate.
So bagna cauda and all these things, bolito, right? These are the Piedmontese. Explain
tartufo.
A little bit the difference. Tartufi, yeah.
Yeah, it's more, let's say the cuisine of Piedmont is very close to, if I can say, to the French cuisine, because also was under the kingdom of Savoy for years. So In one of the first restaurants where I used to work is, you can find onion soup, snail, escargot, tartetan. So it was a part of the local cuisine, because was there like what they know for years.
And their Piemontese is half or more French, right? Their dialect up there.
No oil, no extra virgin olive oil, only butter.
Yeah.
While if you go to Sicily and you use butter, it's considered illegal. You cannot use butter in Sicily.
Piemontese false cortese, dicono, no?
But it's what they say. They say that with everything. They say also with Pugliese. Everything is finished with Eze.
Yeah, it's bad. I once asked my friend, I said, you know, there's this movement in Italy to divide the south from the north. I was like, where do they draw that line? Is it in Rome? Is it in Calabria? And my friend said, they draw the line at the first city south of you. They're already too far south. I always thought that was a great line. So, wow, so you really went. And then Torino, you cooked also at a high-end Michelin star restaurant?
Yeah, it was at the Gatto Nero, and then from the Saint Laurent, was like one of the best person I ever worked for. He owned La Smarrita, which was one of the most famous restaurant in Torino at the time. He owned also 5 or 6 more restaurants. And all the big shot of Torino, they used to come and eat in our place. But he has an approach to ingredient, who I think has changed how I used to see food until then.
Mm-hmm. Very, very interesting. And who taught you? I mean, who is your mentor? I mean, I'm sure it's all these people, but was it your grandmother, your mother? Was it the guy in Sicily? I mean, where did you learn most of your skills? Because it's hard to learn 2 cuisines from Italy.
But let's say the first one, my mother is still a great cook. She does dishes, even if I try to replicate it, I cannot do it, not even close. And why? Because the way she cook and also the ingredient, she get, like, I don't know, to make pasta con le sarde, she get the best ingredient she can. She has the strato of tomato, is the tomato paste, which is not tomato paste, it's just a long process how you dry the fresh tomato puree. So it takes days and days and days. And then she has the white fennel from the mountain. Mm-hmm. She has the sardine for somebody she knows. The sardines are just fresh. Mm-hmm. So, we go back to what we were talking about before. Well, the best technique is not a technique, are the ingredient. Because if you have a great ingredient, it's much easier to cook. So my mother was the first mentor. And then everybody I work for, I learned something. All different, because I work in Piedmont, I work in Sicily, I even work in Germany. I did some stage in France. So I learned something from everybody.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. What about, I jumped over this with pasta, but pling is an Italian, Northern Italy, but I never see it here. I understand it's very hard to make with the fingers, right?
Yeah, we make it. It's not as small like you can find in the plain in Piedmont. They say usually they have like old ladies because they have a little finger. So plain means like pinch. You close the pasta by a pinch. Mm-hmm. So to make it really, really small, you have to have a small finger. So you cannot make it otherwise. we make it, but it's like a little bigger than what they do in Piedmont. And the best plain I have ever had in Piedmont was from Lidia Alciati. Mm. When she was like, there was also one of my big inspiration. I know the family for a long time, and she was a great cook.
She had great fingers.
Probably.
So, well, very, very interesting. So, all of this, I mean, to learn these cultures, to travel around. I mean, you've had the opportunity, I know, with Lidia to do all these fun things around the world and, you know, around the U.S. She's on television. But one of the things that struck me as particularly interesting, you once made a meal for a pope, Benedict the 16th. So what did you cook for him? How did that happen? And what did he eat?
We were asked if we want to eventually cook for the Pope, and of course Lidia say yes immediately without asking any other question. So it was it's not possible to say everything step by step. I was unbelievable. It was something like never.
Where was this?
Was at the they have this, I don't even know what it was called.
In New York.
It was in New York. It was like on 70-something and between 5th and Madison, I believe.
5th Coco Pazzo or
no,
the hotel?
The Pope was sleeping. Was the house where he was living and sleep. So we stayed there. He stayed there for 3 days. We cook. It's not supposed to cook lunch in the beginning. But then we were there. We see the sister try to get some frozen food for the Pope. And we say, don't worry, we're going to do it. So we ending up to cook lunch and dinner for the Pope. We celebrate his birthday. It was unbelievable. At some point, it's really happened. We were singing happy birthday to the Pope in Italian and in English. And Lidia was helping the Pope to cut the cake.
Oh, my God, that is so funny.
So that was unbelievable. And we cooked some, because the mother of the Pope was German. It was German. It was a cook also. It was a chef in a hotel, I believe. So we tried to cook some of the German dishes to remind probably his childhood.
Yeah.
So we did the goulash, strudel. So it was fun.
There's a lot of German influence in Italian cuisine. I mean, right? There's a it's bordered
yeah,
by
more
Germany.
Like, northeast.
Yeah.
Like Trentino. Right. Sometimes also probably Friuli, but Trentino more than anything else.
What about where Lydia's from? Friuli, Venezia, Giulia, and Slovenia, and all that. Is that German influenced?
No, but it's some influence from there, because they do like the strudel. Mm-hmm. They do a kind of goulash. It's called goulash triestino, which is a little different than the German goulash, but is where that goulash come from. So it is a little bit of an influence.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting, the Pope. Did they have a taste tester to eat the food before? Wow, they really just trusted
you. Of course, it was a lot of security. Before we can go in and whatever, was a lot of security. But no, I don't see. It was the sister, they were in the kitchen with us all the time. But it was not that kind of...
Well, if you need food for this Pope, Heritage Foods will donate it. So just give me a call.
It's a possibility. It's a possibility.
Well, no, that is very interesting. So you do this. What did you have a dinner of the year in all of Italy? That was the Italian della Cucina. You went to school there. Did school teach you anything, to do these things? Or do you recommend it to your chefs to go to school?
Yeah, absolutely. It's always good to have an education to start with. Then you have to take whatever you learn at school. Of course, it's not going to be the same you find at school at work. I see like a lot of kids come out of the school right now. They think they are already chef. Mm-hmm. It's nothing, nothing, not even close. After my first year of school, I was working during the summer. I was doing a dishwasher. Mm-hmm. So I was washing dishes, and at that time was a lot of silver tray, copper pots, so it was not everything plated like now. So it was not easy to be a dishwasher at that time. But then I started to help on an appetizer, and I ended up at 16 years old, like to do all the cake for all the events. So mm-hmm. one time I found myself with probably 24 or 25 cake to make in a day. Mm. So I was 16 years old. So I started as a dishwasher, and then I started to learn little by little, little by little. And it's how you usually learn. You don't have to think because you go to school and come back, you're ready to be a chef. It's a lot of steps to learn before.
For sure, for sure. So now your menu at Falidia, just tell us what people will experience, because many people have been many years. It's such an institution. Everyone's going to some shitty new restaurant, and then they forget that there are these old standards that, are the umbrella under which all the other restaurants. So how often do you change the menu? What excites you that's on the menu now?
But we change the menu very, very often. We have like probably six big changing during the year, depending on the season. And then we have few adjustments every 1-2 weeks, depending what's available and what's in the market. Mm-hmm. So we really work with what's available in the moment. It's like that's the most exciting things we can about the menu. For me, every time we change the menu, it's like having a new job, because you see the ingredients, you start to play with the ingredient. Is important for us. For people, it's important to change things, to do new things, to see what the new trends are, but it's also important to keep the tradition. Most of our big sale still are the dishes we have in the menu for 14, 15 years.
What's that, like vitello tonnato or something?
We have a dish that probably represents all of them. It's called raviolo cacio e pere. It's a pear and pecorino ravioli. A classic Italian match, pear and pecorino, presented in a raviolo. In the beginning, was kind of difficult to have people accept the fact of inside the ravioli, the pasta they were eating, was pear and pecorino cheese. And then, little by little, become probably everybody's favorite. It's a dish I cannot really take out of the menu. It's there for 15 years. Wow. I tried one time. I cannot do it. Also because I took it out in summertime, because pear, they are not in season on summertime, and people, they get upset, say, okay, you know what, let's put it back. So it's one of the few dishes that's always there.
Is there a nod to one region in particular at Falidia, or is your job to bring in all the regions?
We don't believe in regional cuisine in the States, because it's impossible to replicate the region cuisine in the States, because it's on the ingredient they have in that specific region. And you cannot import mostly of the ingredient. And it's great because they do that kind of cuisine in that region because they have a local ingredient. What we try to do here is like the flavor of Italy, and we try to work with most of the farm we have around here. I know it's not California. Winter time is very hard to find local ingredient. But as much we can, we try to work with local farm to kind of replicate what is the regional cuisine in Italy. Work with local ingredient and seasonal ingredient.
Yeah, that's the Italian way. Is there such a thing as a bad order at Falidia when you're in the kitchen and you see, table 4 ordered this way, that I wish they hadn't? Is there a great order and a bad order, or is everything...
You know what, it's like when somebody tried to do his own menu. It's like, if they come in Falidia, and I understand you change something because you cannot eat it, but then there's somebody tried to change everything from the appetizer to the middle course to the.
That's annoying.
We try to accommodate as much we can. The problem is most of these people, they order out of the menu. They're not going to be happy because it's not something what we do every day. We try to accommodate them, but it's not what we do. Mm-hmm. So that's a bad order. Can be a bad order.
How many covers do you do on a busy night?
A busy night, I think the most we ever do in one service was a Saturday night. I think we did 357 people.
What is that? Three turns?
It's three turns. But usually, because Saturday night usually is a day when we have a lot of no show or cancellation. So sometimes you try to kind of overbook. And it usually works perfectly because you have like 20 people no show. And 20 people overbook, it goes right. Mm-hmm. That night, everything goes wrong or goes right, depending how you see it. Because everybody show. So it was like we sit people until 12:30 at night.
Wow. So do you have a vice with food? Do you eat McDonald's? Do you like raise pizza with terrible pepperoni? What are your personal vices? And I want to also ask about your kids. You have three kids, 4, 13, and 11. What do they eat and do you cook at home? So some of your personal...
Yeah, I cook home for them as much as I can. Then it's my wife who cooks for them. I cook for myself and my wife every single night. We together after I finish work, arrive home. Sometimes we eat like at midnight. So we, of course, like simple. We don't do like a 5-course testimony. We do something quick and easy, but really, really simple. My kids also, especially my wife, is very strict on what they eat. So it's not soda allowed. In our refrigerator. McDonald's is probably a treat once a year.
It's so funny that it's a treat.
It's a treat.
Yes.
So just don't say no ever.
Yeah.
It's like for me, it was my father used to give me like a sip of wine when I was 15, but never want me to drink soda. It's like my kids. I never have soda in the refrigerator. So for me, when I go out with my friends, everybody was drinking beer, I was drinking soda. I was drinking Coke because I never had in my house.
Yeah. Very interesting. So what are the... how many people work at Philidia right now, by the way?
We have a lot. We have 23 to 24 people in the kitchen. Oof. And probably 27, 28 in the dining room.
Wow. And do you work less in the kitchen now and more by the computer?
No. I was in the kitchen. Yeah. I have somebody else work more on a computer. My sous chef does all the things on a computer. I prefer to stay in the kitchen.
I hear that chefs get very sad. They get promoted and then they are out of the kitchen and they get sad. So you've always been important to you.
If you choose to cook, you want to cook. Yeah. You don't want to. It's different work.
And do you and Lydia ever fight about a vision on a pasta? Or, I mean, do you guys must see eye to eye always? I mean, is it trouble sometimes?
No, fight is probably a big word.
Yeah, no, I didn't
probably
mean that.
Not always, let's say, not always we agree on something, but then we try to find a compromise. So it's good for me, it's good for her, and of course, it to be good for the restaurant.
So how did you do on Iron Chef against Morimoto? I don't remember that episode.
I don't remember either. No, it was a great experience. It was beautiful. I think it was the only thing unfair. It was like I have a Japanese fish against a Japanese chef.
Oh, I see.
I prefer to have a Sicilian fish against a Japanese.
Give him a pling. That should have been the thing.
I'm pretty sure he can do something with that too.
He has small fingers. Well, anyway, listen, I am a big fan. Fortunato, they call you Dodo, and that's your nickname. And I always admired that restaurant group. I remember Mark Kosha started as a dishwasher. Joe started as a dishwasher. You started as a dishwasher. And there are a lot of stories like that in that restaurant group. And it's a tight family. And it's great to see your guys' success, not just here, but in Kansas City, Pittsburgh, L.A., Vegas. So, excellent. And it's nice also, I've been doing the same thing every day for 10 years. So it's nice to know that there's other people that do similar things and don't just try to, see what's on the other side of the fence. Well, thank you so much. I really recommend that people eat at Philidia. It's on 58th, right off of 3rd Avenue, between 3rd and Lex?
Second and 3rd.
It's nice. It's carpeted. It's kind of like old school, but young people would love it too. And thank you so much for coming all the way
to
Brooklyn.
Thank
you. Is this your first time in Brooklyn? No.
My third.
30 years, third time. Well, thanks for bringing him. And we are a nonprofit radio station that has about 40 shows each and every week. We also have a news section. You're going to hear some of the things that Fortunato said on the news as well. So thanks for listening and stay tuned for the next show, Eat Your Words, hosted by Kathy Irway. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.